Good morning. It is still morning, isn't it? Yes. Good morning. As you've heard, my name's Peter Hunter. My wife, Ali, is not here today, but we moved in January, and we'd really appreciate the welcome that we've received here from Thornbury Baptist Church. It's been great. We've moved from Warminster in Wiltshire, where for about 20 years I was the pastor, an Anglican pastor in a church there in Warminster in Christchurch. We had some great time there, and we've moved here to Thornbury. I was going to say for retirement, but actually I've always said there's no such thing as retirement in the kingdom of God. There's only redeployment. So I'm in the process of being redeployed. but it's great to be with you. Now, today we're beginning a new series, which will be going on through both July and August, Knowing God When. Knowing God When. Looking at how our faith in Jesus transforms what happens in some of the challenges of life. And today we're going to be looking at knowing God when I doubt. When I doubt. I'm sure you've experienced the fact that things happen to us or that are said, and they can challenge us, our trust in people, our trust in God. Flying is an activity which is where it's quite important to trust the person who's piloting your aircraft. And back in 1982, a British Airways jumbo jet was flying from Singapore to Australia, and it flew near an erupting volcano. And the ash that was thrown up from the volcano extinguished all four engines. And the captain came on the PA and said, ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. We have a small problem. All four engines have stopped. However, we are doing our best to get them started, and I trust you are not in too much distress. Fortunately, they were able to restart the engines and they landed safely. But I would suggest that the pilot actually had sowed some doubts into the minds of the passengers as to whether he really could do his job. Today, I want us to think about our doubts and how they can both affect and be affected by our relationship with Jesus. And the main Bible reading that I want us to look at is from Mark chapter 9. Probably many of you will be familiar with it. Jesus was returning with Peter, James, and John from the Mount of Transfiguration to the other disciples, and he discovers an argument going on over a boy who was ill, who the disciples had been unable to heal. When they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. "What are you arguing with them about?" he asked. A man in the crowd answered, "Teacher, I brought you my son who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not." "You unbelieving generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me." So they brought him. And when the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, "How long has he been like this?" "From childhood," he answered. "He has often thrown him into the fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." "If you can," said Jesus, "everything is possible for one who believes." Immediately, the boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief." When Jesus saw that a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the impure spirit. "You deaf and mute spirit," he said, "I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, "He's dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. After Jesus had gone indoors, the disciples asked him privately, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" He replied, "This kind can come out only by prayer." Here is a father who is desperate for his son to be made well. No doubt he'd seen that Jesus and the disciples had been healing people, but the disciples don't seem to have been effective in healing his son. So he cries out to Jesus, "Jesus, can't you do something? If you can, everything is possible for one who believes," says Jesus. "I believe, help me overcome my unbelief." It's a wonderful statement of faith. He's saying, "I believe, help me overcome my doubts." Now, there are several things just from this phrase that I want us to notice about doubt and belief. Firstly, they are connected. Faith and doubt are not opposites, but are related. The boy's father is saying, "I believe, but I realize the limits of what I believe. My doubts are the edge of my faith. I would love to believe more." Doubt can be the root to a deeper faith, a stronger belief and trust in God. Doubt is not the opposite of faith, but it is, as in this situation, like his awareness of the boundary of his faith. In the old days, people used to draw maps, and when they came to an area of the map that they didn't understand or they hadn't been, they used to put here, "Beyond here lies dragons." They didn't know what was out there. But no doubt as they explored those areas, they were able to fill in the gaps and take out the phrase. Exploring and facing our doubts is like exploring those regions. Perhaps the father in the story would say, "I believe that you can heal other people of their diseases. I've seen it, but I'm not sure if what my son has is doable." And the reality that your disciples can't make him better makes me wonder if he really is beyond your help. "But I would love to believe that you can help me." Doubt and our doubts are not necessarily neutralizing trust in Jesus. If we harness them, doubt can be the root to a stronger faith. Doubt, if you like, is like a reality check. Notice the man could have just given up, used his doubt to turn away from Jesus, to take his son home, to give up on healing because it hadn't happened. And that's important because how we respond to our doubts is key as to whether it is the route to growing in faith or a loss of faith. So the first thing I want us to notice is doubt is not the opposite of faith, but can become the root to a stronger, deeper faith in Jesus and in what he is doing and wants to do in our lives. The second thing is that doubt happens to ordinary people, including those who have started to explore faith. Doubt happens to Christ followers. The fact the father talks about his doubt, his unbelief in terms of having faith in Jesus, but also having unbelief, areas that he doesn't yet trust Jesus for. We don't know whether he had started following and trusting Jesus or whether he'd just been around for a long time. But what we do see is that doubt is a perfectly normal part of the growth in faith. I might go far as to say that doubts are things that most Christ followers will have at some time or another. There is nothing wrong in having them. In fact, it is perfectly normal. If you want to grow in your faith, then you probably recognize the limits of your trust in Jesus already. And those doubts can be the springboard for growth. Don't be afraid of them, and don't be surprised if others say they have doubts. Even St. Paul said that he was not yet perfect in his life, in his faith, in his walk with Jesus. He was still growing, and it's vital that we let people voice their doubts and that we can play a part as we seek to encourage each other and walk with those people who are facing doubts. Doubt shouldn't threaten us. They are the chance for people to grow. They are a search for the bedrock of faith. So doubts happen to people of faith, either small faith or big faith, but a growing faith. Thirdly, the Father sought Jesus' help in growing in his faith, in believing more than he had done up until that point. And we see here how Jesus responded. In this case, he responded immediately. We'll come back to that in a moment. For next, I want us to look briefly at the roots of doubt. How doubt starts. What are the circumstances that can lead to us having doubts? If you look at a dictionary, I think it's quite helpful. It gives three related descriptions of doubt: unresolved difficulty, uncertainty about the truth, and lack of belief in something, an absence of belief. The father of the boy had an unresolved difficulty. His boy was not well, and the disciples couldn't do anything about it. Illness, particularly prolonged illness, can lead us to doubt. There are other difficulties too that can cause us to doubt. Some of them are temporary ones, like unanswered prayer or delay or unexpected situations. They can make us feel that maybe God doesn't care, that he won't show up for us. And there are more lasting difficulties. Things like bereavement or illness, loss of a dream or a broken relationship. Or maybe we had a vision that we perhaps felt was from God but now seems to be gone. They can make us feel that God is not who we thought he was because he isn't doing what we expected him to do. It raises the question of, can we trust him now? Now that things are working out differently, maybe not as we wanted them to. In the Bible passage, the query is, will Jesus act in my life here, now? And these difficulties, whatever they are, can lead us to be uncertain about the truth. Questions we ask, is God good? Is he good for me? Does he heal? Does he save? Does he love me? What does it mean for him to love me? Or have I misunderstood these things? And those difficulties or uncertainties about the truth can lead on to a doubt that is a lack of belief. What we seek is perhaps outside our experience of God. We are not yet sure that he really will do what the Bible says he will do. Or sometimes it can be because our faith in him is misshapen. Perhaps we feel that we have to do good things to be accepted by God. And if there's something that we've done that we realize is not acceptable to God. We can feel as though we can no longer believe in him. See, there can also be a form of doubt that gives rise to a lack of belief that can come from boredom or over-familiarity. Maybe we've been around church and Christianity for a long time and we feel it's becoming the same old, same old. We're looking for a bit of excitement and so doubt creeps in. Or maybe there is something we would like which we feel as though because of our understanding of what God wants for us or wants for his people is outside our experience. It can appear as though the grass on the other side of the fence looks more exciting and inviting. And so we can want to turn our back on what we know. 3 chapters earlier in Mark chapter 6, at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, when there was a whole lot of action and dynamic, Jesus was teaching and he was healing and he was doing deliverance. It says Jesus goes back to his hometown, to Nazareth. And it says Jesus began to teach. But the reaction was very different from the reaction that he'd had elsewhere. They started to say, well, wait a minute though, isn't this the carpenter that we know? We know him and we know his brothers and sisters. They live here in our town. They were familiar with him. They'd grown up with him. And it says, verse 3, that they took offense. They took offense at him. They turned their back on him. Such that, verse 5 and 6, he could not do any miracles there, except lay his hands on a few people and heal them. For he was amazed at their lack of belief. You see, there is also a reaction to doubt that doesn't build faith, but destroys it. And here it says, they turned away from Jesus. They turned away. We need to beware of this response to doubt. It's very often people who've been in church or around Christianity for a while. They know the worship songs. They've been in small groups. They've listened to sermons, but their faith is not growing. Often they're bored. They think they know all about following Jesus, but it doesn't excite them anymore because they aren't in awe and wonder of who he is. And instead, they're looking around for excitement elsewhere. And that's when the world around starts to feel very attractive. In place of the wonder of worship and the ring of truth, we can come across a number of stumbling blocks. An emotional stumbling block. I don't feel it is true anymore. It feels like I can't relate to God. Feelings so often have their root in fears and not in the truth. And feelings alone are a questionable basis for faith. But feelings too, beware that we don't make decisions based simply on feelings. So there's the emotional stumbling block. There can also be a moral stumbling block. When we fail to find satisfaction in relationships that we know are right, or a sexuality which we know is God-given. It can lead us to want to believe that Christian morals are wrong, and so that if we were to turn our back on that, we could do what we want to do. Don't get tripped up by the moral stumbling block. Or there is the intellectual stumbling block. Christian ideas and teaching often attract ridicule and contempt from the people around us, from the world, from those who we want to be accepted by in our families, in our workplace. And that can make us want to be accepted and so to turn our back on what we have known. This kind of doubt is dangerous to our faith. It doesn't deepen faith, but in fact undermines it as we turn away from Jesus. we turn our back on God. And it can start simply with familiarity and with boredom. I want us to look at the effects of doubt. And we've seen them already. It unsettles. It causes us to fear and to rely on our own judgment, our own reason, rather than on the truth of God. It can cause us to turn away, as the people of Nazareth did, from Jesus. Rather than building faith left unaddressed, doubt undermines and destroys it. How we respond to faith is vital. And we'll come on to that in just a moment. But I want to say one other thing, and that is, make no mistake. It's a but. Make no mistake, Jesus isn't threatened or surprised by our doubts. He isn't weakened or diminished by our doubts. He remains the same. We notice that in Mark chapter 9, the Father and the Son, Jesus speaks and the boy is healed. He didn't turn away because the Father acknowledged his lack of faith. In Nazareth, Jesus wasn't surprised. I guess his disciples were, but he wasn't. He came out with that phrase, a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown. I love the way in that passage it says he could do no miracles there except lay hands on a few and heal them. Sometimes I guess we would love a few healings on a Sunday morning. Jesus is not diminished by our doubts, but more importantly, he stands ready and willing to help. He remained interested in the Father and the Son and the disciples. So then, what can and should we do? Well, we've seen that there are two outcomes of doubt. Faith can be built up and strengthened, or it can be abandoned. How do we respond to ensure doubt builds faith? It is to turn to Jesus. When we doubt, to turn to Jesus for the answers, to expose ourselves to him, to look for his character and his words. He is the one who has the answers to the doubts of our faith. To seek him in worship, spending time in worship together here on Sunday, but at other times as well. Maybe use different forms of worship, reading the Psalms or playing worship tracks or walking in the countryside to get close to God, seeking God with your heart. And as well, remind yourselves of what God has done and is like. And we do that supremely by reading the Bible, the Scriptures, but also by reading and hearing testimonies of others, by recalling and remembering what Jesus has already done for us. Before we moved to Thornbury, I wasn't looking forward to the move away from people and a town and a church that I knew and loved. But God reminded me and he took me back. He reminded me of other moves when God had guided and been faithful. And that so encouraged me. It gave me the courage to trust God for this move, for he is still the same faithful God. I want us to look at Proverbs 3, 4, and 5 as we think of how we can respond to our doubts. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him, and he will make your paths straight. First of all, trust wholeheartedly. Trust wholeheartedly. In Hebrew thinking, the heart was not only the center of emotions, but importantly, it was also the center of will, of our decisions. So decide to stick with Jesus. For Jesus is trustworthy, and he is faithful. Paul, writing to Timothy, reminds him. He says, this is a trustworthy saying. in 2 Timothy 2:13, if we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot disown himself. There's the story of a young man having doubts who went into his bedroom, put his Bible on the floor and stood on it. And he said, Lord, I'm standing on your promises. I will trust you. If you have questions, and it's never wrong to have questions about your faith, take those questions to Jesus. Ask him and seek and wait for his answers from him. Trust the Lord wholeheartedly. Secondly, lean on him completely. Lean on him completely. If you're leaning against a person for support, it is because you know them and they are able to support you. Don't lean on your own understanding, your own experience or feelings. Feelings particularly are fickle. Sometimes simply they depend on what we've eaten the night before. Pride is a dangerous thing. Pride keeps us from asking others for help. And pride can keep us from asking Jesus for help. Pride assumes that we know best, that we know all about our circumstances. Yes, it is true that God has given us minds to think, but that brain is not superior to everything else. Certainly, it is not infallible, but God, he is God. We need to be humble, humble to admit when we are having doubts. As I've said already, most Christians have doubts, and other Christ followers can help us through them, love us through them. But that needs humility, to admit that we need support and help and encouragement. Most of all, as the Father, admit to Jesus that we need help. Lean on him completely. And thirdly, submit your ways to him. Engage with him. Look to see Jesus at work in your life. Seek him. Worship him. Engage your mind to find the answers to the questions you are asking of God. And Jesus will make your path straight. In Mark 9, Jesus responded to the Father's simple prayer, please help my unbelief, therewith a miracle. On another occasion, after the resurrection, when Thomas doubted that Jesus really was alive, Jesus answered him. He revealed himself and appeared and said, come, Thomas, put your hand in my side. When Peter found himself sinking on the lake when he walked towards Jesus, Jesus reached out and lifted him up. Jesus is always faithful. He loves to respond to cries for help. He reveals himself when we seek him wholeheartedly. I don't know if you've come across that quote, if you're feeling far off from God, well, who moved? Maybe today there are some of you who you know you're needing to turn back to Jesus, to return to him. For you have moved back, turn back to him. Can I also say, look out for others who are going through periods of doubt. Be gentle with them. Encourage them and point them and lift them to Jesus. For doubt gives us the opportunity to know Jesus better, to strengthen our faith. Doubt is the stepping stone to a deeper faith when we turn our questions and our attention to Jesus.